Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
If you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free show on 3CR at 1 p.m. every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but and I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, stories of recovery from addictive behaviour, Thursdays at 1 p.m. on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to centre myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free. Welcome to the Living Free show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne. I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that sovereignty over this land was never ceded. Each week on the Living Free show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Today, the focus is on Al-Anon family groups. Al-Anon is a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. Al-Anon believes that alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Before we start, we'd like to remind you that the Living Free show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today's show is a repeat of a interview that we did on the 2nd of September 2021, still during lockdown, I think, or just shortly after the pandemic. It's all getting a bit vague now. The interview is with Victor. Victor grew up in a family where alcohol was abused. His father was frequently violent, and to survive, Victor became hypervigilant and sensitive to the moods of his parents, and later in life he found his way to Al-Anon, and this is Victor telling his story.
Hi, Anne. Yeah, I would, and I'd be happy to do that. I just want to point out a couple of things. I don't know how totally relevant it all is, but I identify and come to Al-Anon because I grew up in a family affected by alcoholism. So I identify as an adult child of an alcoholic. And, you know, a lot of people that come to Al-Anon might not have grown up in a family like that, but they married someone who turned out to be, you know, a problem drinker or an alcoholic. And other people who come to the program have a friend or, you know, perhaps even a child who's an addict or an alcoholic. So I come to Al-Anon because I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. And also, I just want to mention my actual name is not Victor. But, you know, for the purposes of anonymity, which is a big aspect of the program, you know, it's important that I don't. No one gets hurt, you know. For instance, if a sibling or someone from my family of origin should hear this and they disagree and then start an argument, you know, that is what the family disease is like, you know. There's no easy answers. So I grew up in a home that was violent. My father was always drunk. I remember him as this ravaging, red-faced monster, you know, and he was always angry. and very violent, very violent. And if there wasn't actual violence occurring, there was the threat, you know. I was just thinking or remembering this morning, you know, after, you know, you've been, this sort of thing's gone on for so many years, it's sort of a bit like a beaten animal, you know, and if you see a dark look on someone's face, you know, the fear and the shuddering starts to happen. And, you know, so I was controlled eventually by other people's moods. There was 6 children in the family, 1 girl and 5 boys, you know. I feel so sorry for my sister, and my parents, you know, literally tortured her into actual insanity, you know, devastating sort of stuff. And her brothers, you know, laughed at her. I can't, you know, I couldn't understand it. You know, for me, it was clear as day that, you know, this abusive sort of behavior was what had caused her anguish, and the, you know, the sarcasm and the torture, the sarcasm and the physical beatings as well as, yeah, anyway, just horrific sort of stuff. Like, I never need to watch a horror movie. That was horrific enough. You know, people find it hard to believe that, you know, I say that my father was never happy, he was always angry, and people go, well, that can't be right, you know. But in fact, I was in Al-Anon for 5 years before I realized that my father had never spoken to me like a human being. He'd never said, you know, hi, welcome home, or, you know, he once, when I was much older and I came back to visit my family, they hadn't seen me for years, and he looked at me and he went, oh, it's you. You know, that's just what he was like. Selfish, I want to swear, but anyway, that's, you know, what they call the family disease. You know, it's called the family disease because everyone gets affected, and in that chaos of bickering and fighting and physical abuse, you know, I lost any sort of chance of having an innocence in childhood. You know, for me to get away from it, from them, was to go and play in the bush. And, you know, this is the fortunate thing for me, as we lived, you know, in a bushy sort of area, and there was creeks and to play in and trees and other kids to play with. We'd just disappear all day, you know, if I was home. And because you didn't want to be in the house, you know.
So one of your coping mechanisms was just to exit the situation. Can you talk about any other coping methods that you had, or any decisions that you made as a child about how you would deal with the situation that you were in?
I can look back at it now, but of course, as a child, I was just doing what was instinctual. And, you know, my instinctual drive was to heal the situation. That was just part of my personality, you know. I've come to see that. You know, I thought if I could make everyone laugh, so, you know, I became a bit of a comedian, and, you know, and my brothers were also, could be very funny. And so we had this sort of humor, but it was, you know, it was on the edge. It was intense. And for other people, anyone else that came into the environment, it was like they'd be looking around like, what's going on here? Because it was, yeah, it was so introvert or something. Yeah, for the family, this is another aspect of the family, was that I didn't know any of my relatives. So I believe my parents had relatives, but I, you know, was never introduced to them. And my parents didn't have friends that came to the house, And in that state of isolation, you know, they say that like alcoholism can really run rampant in that. So my father could get away with doing whatever he wanted to. My mother was not an alcoholic, but she had a terrible childhood, a terrible life. You know, it was sort of pretty rotten. It was very rotten what happened to her. And then she married my father. And I think for a want of anything better to do, she started behaving like him. I guess if you can't beat him, you know, join him. And, you know, by the end of it, when I was a young adult, she'd be holding me back, you know, and while he was throwing the punches to stop me from fighting back, you know. My parents, as I said, had six children, and that was too much, you know, it was confusing. And as things settled out, you know, and I became a young teenager and stuff, you know, what ended up happening, because the disease, they say, is progressive, it gets worse and worse if nothing's done about it. I had one brother who was very much like my father. And as it turned out, you know, my parents actually said to me one time when I'd gone back to visit them and I'd done all this work on their house for them, they must have been off talking about it, and they came out and said to me, you know, you'll never be anything to us. We don't love you. We love your brother, the one that's in the army. And I remember sitting at the table as a young adult thinking to myself, oh, my God, I've got idiots for parents. That was my, you know, normal sort of go-to. So I guess one of those coping mechanisms I used was this sort of ironic humour, facetious humour. Yeah.
So you talked about this abusive situation that you were in and how your response to that was to become someone who wanted to save people, who was controlled by other people's moods, who wanted to heal the situation and who tried to do that with humour. Could you talk about how that showed up in your life as a young adult after you moved out of the family situation?
So, you know, we're talking about my coping mechanism and we call it the family disease. You know, I've come to love these terms because it helped put a definition around what I was struggling with in my life. And I just want to say, you know, there was six children in that family. So one of my coping mechanisms was to try and heal the situation and make it better and use humour, etc. I just want to say all of the children were affected. So, you know, I've got siblings that are alcohol and drug addicts. The eldest one, when he got married and had children, in order to stop beating his children, who were just babies at the time, he became a born-again Christian. And so he didn't want to know me anymore because I was evil, because I wouldn't join the same, as I see it, you know, it's like not joining the same football club or something, you know, I didn't believe that same thing. So, you know, this is the family disease, how everything, you know, explodes in a, yeah, in this terrible sort of fight. yeah, so all of that happened as a younger person, and as I started to gain my own independence. And, you know, I was independent from 12 that I can remember, because I don't, you know, a lot of my childhood is blocked out from my actual memory. As a young man, a teenager probably, I tried to make friends with my brothers and sister, and the elder ones had all gone by then. And so I ran around and visited them, tried to make friends with them and stuff, and wanted to say, oh, wow, well, that was intense, eh? You know, and, you know, maybe we could all be friends now. But, of course, everyone was so affected that it just didn't work out well It only took me about 20 years to find that out. But, you know, part of that humorous sort of thing that I used as a defense mechanism, you know, I used, you know, in school days, you know, I was a class clown, you know, would say things, which would often have the class laughing. But, you know, the teachers must have been a nightmare for the teachers. I can just imagine, you know, and, you know, I can see now that, I mean, I didn't know, but I was just doing the best I could. You know, that sort of humour was not always appropriate. Sometimes it was sort of cutting edge and could be, you know, described as perhaps even sarcasm at times. And I guess, you know, like picking up stray dogs, you know, I couldn't make my family home better, but perhaps I could make something else better in the world. And anyway, yeah, so I really had to, you know, stop doing that because it was making my life a damn misery, really. I just want to say, you know, I've always felt fortunate to have had, you know, a good bunch of friends. And from when I was a young teenager, I had a real good circle of friends that we ran wild, absolutely wild, and went on great adventures. And, you know, this sort of stuff was what saved my life, I think.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. Disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Yarra Bicycle Users Group Radio, 10 a.m. every Monday morning on Community Radio 3CR. Also live streaming on the web and weekly podcasts at 3cr.org.au. So listen in for the very latest bicycle stories, news and views from Melbourne and around the cycling universe. Listen in.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us by phone or email. Today is a repeat of a conversation I had with Victor back in 2021, and Victor is a member of Al-Anon.
So thank you. Just before the break, Victor, you were talking about the effects of alcoholism on you as a person functioning in the outside world, how you became the class clown, how you were doing the best you could, how the situation in your house wasn't the only thing that determined your life and that you had happiness outside of the house too. I would like you to talk a little bit now about, as a person who had gone through their adult life controlled by other people's moods, wanting to save people, I think you talked about picking up stray dogs, what that looked like and just before you came to Al-Anon, and what was it that brought you to Al-Anon?
Yeah, thanks, Anne. They say this disease is cunning, baffling and powerful. You know, it's very tricky. You know, some of the long-lasting effects of growing up in that environment was, you know, the struggle I had just being comfortable in my own skin. I was hyper vigilant. which is a great word. And back in the 1970s and stuff, it was called, you know, a broad stroke sort of paranoia. Fortunately, that terminology has been redefined. I was oversensitive, hypersensitive to other people's thoughts, feelings, moods, opinions. I didn't have much of a sense of myself, you know, who I was at the core and what I liked and who I, you know, what I wanted to do in the world. And then, you know, then comes the struggle of searching for love. And I got into some terrible messes, I got to say. You know, I didn't have skills. When I was a very young teenager, I worked for someone doing deliveries on my push bike. You know, I was like 13 or so, and I'd be out late riding my push bike, delivering for the shop. And anyway, as a young adult, I got into some strife. And he offered to help me a little bit. And he said to me, "Don't tell your parents." And I didn't realize, you know, but this man had obviously knew or, you know, could see, you know, what was going on in my home. I didn't know, you know, that anyone could see that. And he was right too, you know. So, you know, there's another aspect of that that I carried into the world. There was no support mechanism. There was nowhere to go back to. There was no safety. Yeah, my parents' behavior was appalling. Trying to make a, you know, solid, heartfelt connection with people was, you know, not easy for me. And even a lot of the hippies that I hung out with, you know, I remember one day sort of having the stark realization that, you know, a lot of them had families to go home to and places to go. Whereas for me, it was a bit like an endless sort of journey, really. So, yeah, I got into my work, which, you know, I really enjoyed and sort of felt my way through the world, as in trying to go on what felt like, you know, the strongest inclination and inspiration that I had. Just before I got to Al-Anon, like I got to Al-Anon in my late 30s, I had a, you know, a marriage and divorce by that time and a child. And so we were separated, but I did this great slab of work, and then I took myself for a holiday to Indonesia. And I'd always been sort of interested in, you know, what was going on with me, and tried to work out why the hell I felt so rotten. By the end of that holiday, you know, I remember I was sitting in a bar in Bali feeling homicidal or suicidal. You know, the emotional pain, turmoil was just overwhelming. But there was also a part of me that was like watching, and, you know, another part of me that was like realizing I didn't want any of those things. But that's how, you know, that was the split and the confusion in me. You know, again, I had some wonderful adventures on this at this time in Indonesia. And one thing that did happen is I went for a walk up to this volcano in the middle of Bali, and this Indonesian guy had attached himself to me, you know, as my guide. How much money have I got? And anyway, I said, yeah, okay. And he said, oh, I'll take you up the, you know, the side that the tourists don't normally go. And we went up the backside of this volcano, and I had a very elating experience of looking into these craters in the volcano and seeing the colours of the sulfates on the edge of the rock, and him telling me how the artists in Indonesia throw tin cans into this crater and draw these colours out and then mix them with pigment and paint, you know. And anyway, it was quite an elating experience. And when we were walking down after being there, I was humming to myself. This is something that I sort of did, you know, and I was just humming like this. And he's turned around to me and said, "What's that you're saying? It sounds like a prayer in our language." And I said, "Oh, it's just humming. It wasn't anything really." And he said, "No, the prayer, it's like this. It says, 'God, I've had a hard life. Come and help make it better.'" And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, well, that's right. That's right, you know. Anyway, when I got back to Australia after this trip, I felt desolate. You know, I looked around my apartment and went, well, I've tried and struggled to make, you know, a decent life, and I'm just empty. And this mate had lent me a book to read before I'd gone to Indonesia, and it was called At My Father's Wedding. And I remember reading in the book this guy saying that his father was an alcoholic and he found it was good to have a support group for that. And, you know, it just occurred to me when I got back, okay. So, you know, I started looking, and I went to this thing called Adult Children of Alcoholics, and this was quite some years ago. And at the time there was two other guys there, and I went and met up with them, and they sat around talking about how bad their lives had been. And I come away thinking, man, that's just making me more depressed. I can't do that. Eventually, I did phone up Al-Anon because it was for friends and families of alcoholics. And I thought to myself, you know, I've had enough of families and enough of alcoholics. Why would I want to go to this place? My God. Anyway, I was so desperate, I phoned up, and it seemed I spoke to a little old lady on the phone, or it sort of seemed like at the time, and she said, you know, just go along to this place on Friday night. You'll be right, love. You know, and I, with trepidation in my heart, I went along to this place, and there were these people, and I got to say, the stuff they talked about rang true for me, you know, and I'd done a lot of searching beforehand. What I understand about that now is that a lot of the searching I had done, and the therapies and the talking to counsellors and all this, was often just dealing with the symptoms of what we call the family disease. It wasn't dealing with the cause, which was that my father was an alcoholic. He didn't choose to be an alcoholic, but it's come through his family line somewhere, and he's picked it up and ran with it. And it's affected me. And as much as I didn't want to accept it, I've been traumatized by that experience. It had messed me over pretty bad. And, you know, I hadn't had proper opportunity to develop as a child, you know. I finally surrendered and came to Al-Anon. And they asked me if I wanted to share. Yes, Anne, please ask me a question.
I think you were probably going to answer it anyway. I was just going to ask you, I was interested in what you did here at that first Al-Anon meeting, or what happened at it, but it looks to me like you're about to tell us. So let's hear what happens.
You know, someone stood up. I remember them standing up and talking about being hypersensitive to everything that was around them, you know. And I thought, oh, I could relate to that, you know. And there was some talking about, you know, the arguments and the yelling and screaming in families, and how families fight. And, you know, I could relate to this sort of stuff. In the end, they asked me if I wanted to say anything, and I said I couldn't, you know. I thought I was going to cry. And they said, "That's okay, you can cry." And I thought to myself, yeah, I don't know you people. I don't think I'm going to be sitting here crying. But it did, you know, started stirring up a big well of sadness.
Thank you, Victor. It was so interesting to hear you describe your experience in Indonesia. And it sounded so much, in AA, they talk about the alcoholic will only get help when they reach a rock bottom. And it seemed to me you really described that connection between hitting a rock bottom and having a spiritual experience that seems to happen so often, and then to reach out for help. And so a big part of the 12-step program is reaching out to help, for help to other people, but also to a power greater than ourselves. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that spiritual concept that we have in the 12-step groups.
I'm comfortable with this. I could understand why people wouldn't be comfortable. And, you know, part of the dilemma of the family disease was that as a child, for some years on and off, I went to a Catholic school, and you know, that was pretty horrific, actually. You know, they said I'd probably go to hell and then I'd have to go home, and it was hell. But for some reason, it didn't put me off the idea that, you know, in the world there was something, what I would say, greater than myself or whatever, or something. You know, for me, I described, you know, looking into that volcano and having an elating experience, you know, or looking into that crater. And for me, nature has often, you know, just done things to me that it's a, you know, a full body sensual experience, you know, being immersed in water, or looking at amazing things in the landscape, or, you know, just looking at, you know, a flower, for instance, you know. And for me, I would wonder, you know, look at this thing, you know, I mean, I didn't make it. It's come from somewhere. I've really, as I said, you know, as a young child, you know, escaping into the play in the creek, was an escape for me. But, you know, I found a deeper connection with, you know, lots of aspects of nature, from, you know, growing food in a garden to, you know, to enjoying your landscapes and storms and atmospheric sort of, you know, weather and stuff. So for me, that is a power greater than myself. And, you know, I'm happy to call that my higher power. I know, you know, the language in the steps, and I could see why it might frighten people away. It sounds religious, you know, God, Him, all this sort of stuff. I find for myself, I'm happy just to ignore what I don't want to hear. So one thing, I don't think I would have stuck around Al-Anon if it had said to me, you have to believe in this or you're going to hell. I would have thought, well, flock you guys, I'm going elsewhere, you know. But, you know, the truth is, it's beautiful, actually. Al-Anon just says, just do whatever the hell you want. this thing works best. So what I found in the program was that, as I mentioned before, you know, I wanted to heal the family I grew up in. This was part of my natural inclination, and this is part of my natural self. I feel that connection with something out there. I know I can sit down and like meditate and send out good vibes to my daughter, and she can like pick it up, and she's, you know, lives a couple of thousand kilometers away. But we often talk about that sort of stuff, you know.
Fitzroy Legal Service has launched a free information and advice phone service for people who have been stopped, questioned, fined or charged for breaching the new COVID-19 restrictions. Have you been fined or charged under the new laws, or stopped and questioned by police for being outside?
Call 0434 136 501, weekdays between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. That's 0434 136 501, or head to fitzroy-legal.org.au for more information. You can also report incidents at covidpolicing.org.au.
Fitzroy Legal Service is a 3CR supporter. This is a Living 3 show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. And we're talking to Victor about recovery from the effects of being close to someone with a problem of alcoholism. And this first aired on 3CR in 2021.
You've spoken so eloquently about you first coming to Al-Anon and where your life was at that point. And it's been wonderful to hear of the happiness that's existed in your life alongside the devastation in your family. I'm wondering if you can talk now about your recovery in Al-Anon. We talk about Al-Anon being a group to help people suffering from a family disease, and therefore we talk about recovery from that disease.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. I'd love to. And it just occurred to me, you know, while you were playing that song, that, you know, another one of my primary things, like that desire for health and happiness, was music. You know, music was so important to my soul, you know, it, and still today, you know, I, you know, love beats and rhythms and sounds. Only the ones I like, of course. The ones, there's plenty out there I don't like. A very specific sort of tastes that work for me. But that is another aspect of the higher power that stirs my soul. I want to mention that, you know, I came into the program and it can be frightening, you know, because I repressed so much stuff for so many years, never been able to tell anyone. And I got to say, you know, before I came to Al-Anon, if I did mention to anyone stuff about my, where I grew up and how I grew up, it was too much for people to cope with. And I've got to say, that's probably been the case with some counsellors and stuff as well. They go, whoa, that's just too intense, man. I can't deal with that. And I have heard other people, you know, newcomers into the program, sort of into Al-Anon, going, all of a sudden I'm having all these feelings. I don't think I felt this bad before. I got to say, you know, it might seem like that at the beginning. And I've heard of this in other sort of spiritual disciplines as well. I'm learning all this stuff about myself. All of a sudden I have all this evidence to prove that, you know, all this rotten stuff. Anyway, what I want to say is that that stuff calms down, it passes after a while. But yeah, the first few years I found quite difficult because I couldn't really speak about what had happened to me. I didn't know how to put words around that. You know, interestingly, well, it's interesting for me because I'm talking about me, but when I first came into the program, I was working. And I was standing up in front of my work at that time. Anyway, I was standing up in front of hundreds of people by myself and talking to them, you know, for hours on end. And people would be entertained and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, I remember one day, you know, I'd stood up by myself and spoken to like 600 people. And I'd gone to an Al-Anon meeting that evening, and I'd just been in Al-Anon for, you know, a few months or whatever. And they'd said to me, would I like to stand up and do what they call a personal story, you know, talk about. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't actually speak because it was too close or it was too unknown. I didn't know how to wrap words around it. I didn't know. Yeah, that was the confusion that was inside of me. And You know, I remember going home that night, standing in the shower and thinking to myself, next time those people ask you, you've got to try it, you know. And the next time I was asked to stand up and speak, I did, but I had to hold on to a chair because my head was spinning around and around. I was talking about all this stuff I'd never spoken about. You know, it was obvious to me I had layers and layers of grief, sadness, anger. What I felt was hatred at the time, which is, of course, was me wanting love and being abandoned and rejected. And so instead of it being love, it was violent sort of feeling inside of myself. So it can be quite sort of confronting at first. And I'd sit in meetings and people would say, oh, you know, the problem drinker did this, blah, blah, blah. And everyone in the room would break out laughing. And I'd think, how can they do that? I would be so, like, irritated, you know. And one of the effects of this disease for me was this overthinking, what I've heard described as analysis paralysis. So as a young child, you know, I was trying to think, what can I do to fix this damn situation up? So my mind got on this, like, a treadmill of around and around and around. And, of course, it's like a stuck record of jump, you know, around, jump, not going anywhere helpful, you know. It's a bit like worry. It's activity, but it's not getting me anywhere helpful. It's sort of digging me deeper into a hole. What I found happened, I mention it because it was such an important thing for me. After slowly over time of being in the meeting, slowly my mind would calm down. I mean, I had the understandings of what meditation was. And in fact, you know, you mentioned about the spiritual thing there. You asked me that question earlier, but when I was 19 years old, I got time off work and I went and did a meditation course that went for 10 days. And it's a pretty hard experience. And I, you know, remember waking up from nightmares in the night, and it really stirred stuff up for me. But it actually has been a foundation for me being able to center myself and be okay in myself and have, you know, work on this, what I would call a spiritual connection, which I'm happy to talk about more to get, you know, more clarification on what that is. Recovery, you know, is a beautiful thing, beautiful description of what happens. You know, I can recover some self-esteem. One of the things I learned early on, and I said I was standing up in front of all these people talking and being entertaining, and I had this Al-Anon Daily Reader and I was reading it, and it told me, you know, on this particular day that what I do, I don't do for the gratification of people coming up and patting me on the back. Whatever I'm doing for myself. And it turned my world around. I realized, you know, when I was, and because I was doing this work at the time, I could go and stand in front of these people, and whatever happened in the end, it wasn't about whether they liked it or not. You know, it was about whether I felt I'd done a good job, if I put the best I could into it. And God, it made my life so much easier. Instead of, you know, someone said this thing to me, you know, like, you know, when you go out there, instead of trying to get them to love you, go out there and show them how much you love them. And that, you know, resonated back to that original core theme myself. It was all of a sudden, you know, instead of trying to get love and falling into messes, I could just go out and give it. It was, yeah, a beautiful turnaround for me in my life. Would you like to ask me a question?
Yes, I was just wondering how you are now with some of your other habits. Like, are you still inclined to want to save people? Are you still inclined to be controlled by others' moods? Are you still inclined to heal situations? And if so, what do you do about that nowadays?
As I said, you know, that primary energy is, you know, part of my makeup and character. And, you know, I've got a list here beside me of some of the gifts of the program. And one of them is that you know, now I can see the potholes in the road in front of me, so I don't have to keep falling into the same pothole. Now I can see when someone's throwing out a hook and trying to hook me in, you know, and it's been a situation in my life recently when someone asked me to be the executor on their estate, and I did some exploration and talked it through with some Al-Anon people and realized it would be completely inappropriate. I'd be stuck in between, you know, the only family I have, and it would be a mess. Some years later, you know, it's just some things have played out now that have proven, yeah, that's great. You know, it was really great that I chose not to do that. I guess one of the things relating to your question is that Al-Anon has given me the pause factor, which, you know, is not just common to, I mean, it's common in the world is what I'm trying to get at. And that's another thing I love about Al-Anon, you know, it's not esoteric information that's secret or anything. You know, a lot of stuff is come from common wisdom that's in Al-Anon, and that's really important to me, you know. But yeah, this pause factor, and I know mindfulness, it's taught in schools now, especially the teenagers, you know, before you react, count to 10 or something, you know, when I could see a situation looming up that is looking like it might be a pothole for me to, you know, another hole for us to dig for myself, you know, I can see it coming and go, there's this wonderful tool I can use. I can say to people, oh, let me think about that and I'll get back to you. I'd like to just tell you about some of the gifts I feel. It helped me get a better connection with a power greater than myself. When I'm in a meeting, I'm with other people, I'm with a power greater than myself. So it's helped me with that connection. I feel that was my family heart that has been damaged. And I've learned from being in the program that what happened to me was like my social heart was damaged. You know, that was environmental training, if you know what I mean. But as a person, I'm not damaged goods, even though I felt like I was before I got into Al-Anon. You know, I felt so bad. I've learned how to be grateful, which is a beautiful thing, you know, just how to appreciate stuff. Instead of always being thinking, worrying, you know, tasting food and it turns to ash in my mouth, that old thing, you know, it's like I can appreciate tastes, sight and sound. A great thing for me that came about from being in the program was that I can sleep through at night now instead of waking up at 2 or 3 in the morning worrying about everything, not being able to get to sleep and then getting back to sleep and having to get up for work in the morning and feeling exhausted and wrung out. Al-Anon, you know, I found is a great self-reflecting tool. So people share in the meetings and I listen to what other people say. And sometimes I go, oh, yeah, that's how it is for me. Or I could try that little thing in my life as well. And so I see myself reflected back in what other people say and do in the meetings. And likewise, you know, I say stuff, whatever comes off the top of my head, and, you know, it can be valuable at times for other people. I love this definition of sanity is where my head, my heart, and my mouth are in alignment.
That's a really great place to end. Thank you very much for coming in today, Victor.
Thank you, Anne. It's a pleasure.
That's all we've got time for. I'd like to thank Victor for sharing his experience with us. If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon family groups, then you can phone them on 1300 252 666 or go online at alanon.org.au. If the content in the segment you just listened to has raised questions or caused distress, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.